brand new service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush reversed course under heavy pressure on Tuesday and agreed to let his national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, give sworn testimony before the September 11th commission. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney also agreed to meet together privately with the full panel, abandoning their earlier insistence that they would meet only with the commission's chairman and vice chairman. Rice was likely to testify toward the end of next week, with Bush and Cheney following sometime after that, a senior administration official said. In one of the bloodiest days and weeks for the U.S. military, five troops died when a bomb exploded under their military vehicle west of Baghdad on Wednesday. At least four foreign nationals, including one American, were killed in a separate attack, and some of the bodies were burned, beaten, and hanged from a bridge. A military spokesman declined to say what nationality the soldiers were, but the vast majority of troops operating in the Al-Anbar province west of Baghdad are U.S. Marines. Treasury Secretary John Snow reignited the political argument over U.S. companies shipping jobs overseas Tuesday with comments that outsourcing was an integral part of a global trading system. Snow's comments in economically hard-hit Ohio were published as George W. Bush was delivering a speech defending his free trade policies in Wisconsin, a state that has lost 80,000 manufacturing jobs. Asked in a newspaper interview whether he thought outsourcing of jobs to other countries made the country strong, Snow replied, "It's one aspect of trade, and there can't be any doubt about the fact that trade makes America strong." In a high-octane election year fight, Democrat John Kerry on Tuesday sought to lay the blame for soaring gas prices on a resistant Republican administration, while George W. Bush warned of higher gas taxes from some in the other party in Washington. The presumptive Democratic nominee complained that Bush has not taken steps to drive prices down, calling on the administration to stop pumping oil into the nation's emergency stockpile until Americans see cheaper prices. The administration has rejected that notion. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Treasury Secretary John Snow was set to say on Friday that frivolous lawsuits had caused the U.S. ladder industry to fold before a Small Business Administration conference. Snow planned to say there is not a single company left in the United States that makes ladders. The lawsuits got to be too much for the ladder industry. But when the department discovered there were some 11 producers selling $850 million worth of ladders in the United States, the speech was changed. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have been to the cross, and I have felt the passion. Not Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, where viewers get to see a Jesus character beaten to a bloody pulp and then graphically crucified on a cross. No, there's nothing at all holy or redeeming about the cross I have witnessed. It's a political cross, marking the spot in Austin, Texas, where the GOP's diabolical hatchet man, Tom DeLay, beat our state's representative democracy to a pulp. This simple wooden cross, nailed to a telephone pole, is 4 feet high, painted white, and hand-lettered. The crosspiece says, Democracy. The centerpiece says, R.I.P., killed by Tom DeLay on this spot. Tom, of course, is the nutball Republican majority leader of the U.S. House, who stormed into the Texas state capitol last year and used the GOP's total control of state government to ram through a grossly partisan, contorted piece of raw gerrymandering that autocratically redraws our state's congressional districts and steals half a dozen seats from the Democrats, a theft that will alter the balance of power in Washington. Austin has long had its own coherent congressional district, logical for a state capital and a community of shared interests. DeLay's power grab, however, fractures our city into three shards of incoherent districts that are dominated by populations far from our borders. Stand in central Austin at 38th and Ronson Streets, where the telephone pole cross was erected, and you are at the epicenter of the fracture. Step in one direction and you're in a district controlled by San Antonio's Republican suburbs. Step in another direction and you're in a district running 300 miles away to the Rio Grande Valley. Step again and you're in a district controlled by Houston's Republican suburbs. This is Jim Hightower saying, a majority of Austinites now have congressional districts without representation. There once was a revolution over that anti-democratic principle.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you here live, coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. And also now, oddly enough, interestingly enough, on cable TV, cable radio network. Anyhow, we're back with you. It is Wednesday the 31st of March, 907 days since the hunt for Osama bin Laden has been declared. You know, one of the recurring questions that people ask when they call into the program is, what is the conservative vision of America really about? I mean, what's the bottom line here? And I tried to answer that in my own ways over the years. And today we have on Soso Whaley. Soso is an adjunct fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And a really cool part of her life that really I was poking around the internet here and found this article about her taking this thing into schools. And I thought, this is so cool. She's the host of Critter Corner, a segment for Camo Country TV, which is part of the NESN Outdoors lineup of sports shows. She's spent the past 20 years educating adults and children about our relationship with other species. With her literary Llama Zoomobile, and is included among her working partners, a capuchin monkey named Ungawa. And I remember an old joke about that. Anyhow, and an anteater named Anthony and a great horned owl named Tiny. She's a strong proponent of taking personal responsibility for one's actions and also believes that learning about critical thinking helps keep the mind young and active. So, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you for having me, Tom.
I'm pleased to have you here. The topic here that we're going to talk about is this whole issue of whether people should be able to sue for obesity. I believe that's a topic that I noticed on your this calendar that you put together, this thing about junk science. I thought you made some good points here. You say that junk science is nothing more than fraud perpetrated on the public by the manipulation of data in order to advance the private agenda of an individual or organization and create an atmosphere of fear in order to gain financially.
Oh, sure.
And so I'm wondering, before the larger question, frankly, the way that I frame this is, how do we, the people, protect ourselves from the predators among us? And the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which you work for, has a long history of taking money from the tobacco industry. And one of your analysts, Alexander Volek, said that smoking is in the fine tradition of civil disobedience championed by Thoreau, and we should even think of smoking as a civic duty. He admitted that the government's efforts to discourage smoking may further the cause of health, but concluded, quote, there are things more valuable than health. What's going on there?
Well, actually, I don't know much about that. I am just an adjunct fellow. I don't really work for Competitive Enterprise. I help them out with some of their research occasionally and speak for them on certain topics, in this case, obesity. Mm-hmm. But in terms of cigarette smoking and what have you, I mean, if you want to go down that path, you know, obviously at one point in time, you know, when they started doing all the cigarette litigation and what have you. Granted, the cigarette companies, they were no better in all of this by trying to hide a lot of this information, which was really important to the public, you know, just for profit. So it didn't help when they did that. Unfortunately, some people did say that it would turn out to be a slippery slope, and it has, so in a way, because we're taking away the personal responsibility of each person, you know, for whatever they put into their body. You know, if they understand the risk, that should be that. And, you know,
That's the key, don't you think, if they understand
right.
the risk? You know, I live in a small town here in Vermont, and we had a doctor here in this community who was doing unnecessary surgeries. And I knew about it a year before he got busted. I mean, because everybody in town knew.
I'm sure there's a lot of doctors out there that do that type of thing.
No, but I mean, the point is that in a small community, if somebody is, well, the other big thing that happened here in Vermont last year, somebody was selling maple syrup that was adulterated with cane sugar, and the word spread, and this guy got busted, because that's a big crime in Vermont.
Absolutely.
And so, anyhow, in a small community, we can all figure out how to protect ourselves from the
right.
predators among us.
Mm-hmm.
But the tobacco companies were really predators. I mean, they knew in the 1930s that their product killed people.
True.
And yet they hired people like your organization to front for them and say, no, this isn't a problem.
Well, I think that in terms of hiring someone to speak for them, and I'm sure that the other monies have been given to other organizations as well as CEI, CEI basically looks at the freedoms that we have and tries to keep people from regulating, over-regulating, so that we don't have any freedoms at all. You know, in terms of, again, CEI taking money, I really don't know much about that. Although I do know that, you know, everyone takes money, no matter which side that you're on. You're all taking money in one way or another.
Yeah, but, you know, going back to your definition of junk science.
Right, right.
You know, it's a fraud perpetrated on the public by the manipulation of data in order to advance the private agenda of an individual organization, create an atmosphere of fear in order to gain financially.
Absolutely, and that applies to the cigarette companies as well as other groups.
Right,
so that's the same with anybody.
So do you think that it's appropriate if the tobacco industry is lying to us and saying, I mean, I remember, I'm you're probably not old enough to remember this, but I am. I remember in the 1950s, actually, I remember when my father stopped smoking Camels and started smoking Pall Malls, and I also remember Ronald Reagan going on TV in a doctor's outfit
right.
saying, smoke Pall Malls, they're good for you.
They're good for you. Oh, actually, no, I'm going to be 50 next year, so I grew
up
in the
50s. Okay, so, yeah, we both remember this.
Right, and my father also smoked as well. I remember when he quit. I smoked for about 20 years myself, even though when I started smoking, certainly a lot more of this information was coming out to the public. But I do remember when doctors actually used to promote this type of thing, and I believe you can buy stuff on eBay now.
Right. And
the point is
they did it. They promoted it because the tobacco companies were giving them lies.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where
isn't that junk science?
What caused the problem later on when the tobacco companies when it came out and all this lying, you know, granted, you know, it was a shameless way of making money and keeping the public uninformed. And, you know, they kind of hurt themselves in that way. But, you know, nowadays I see a lot of stuff on TV, you know, it's required now because of some of the settlements that they have to put an effort into advertising to prevent kids from smoking, that type of thing. So I see a lot more, you know, information coming out from them, which does describe the health effects.
Right.
That's just in the United States,
isn't
though. I'm
that,
not talking about Europe or other
Well, actually,
places.
It's happening all around the world. But isn't that the result of citizen lawsuits? I mean, isn't that what broke it open?
Absolutely, absolutely. So are you saying, though, that we should have citizen lawsuits against obesity?
Well, that's where we get to the second thing. See, the smoking gun for tobacco was for years they were claiming, even though they knew that nicotine was deadly,
right,
they were claiming that it wasn't, and in fact it was actually healthful for you.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, and, I understand that.
Okay. So now we have perhaps a smoking gun in the fast food industry.
Perhaps.
And this article that was published this month in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it's actually not the first.
Right.
The first study that came out on this is more than 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, the New York Times reported 2 years ago.
Right.
Where is it here? Yeah. A University of Minnesota study. This was reported in 2000 on July 19th, 2002 in the New York Times.
Right.
University of Minnesota study found that a diet high in fructose elevates triglyceride levels in men shortly after eating and has been linked to increased risk of obesity and heart disease.
Right.
I mean, verbatim quote from the New York Times.
I'm still waiting on the to see some information on that from Stephen Malloy at junkscience.com and what have you. So I don't dare comment on the fructose issue because it's still kind of a new thing here.
Well, a peer-reviewed study is pretty solid. I mean, it's, in order to get something through peer review.
Depends on what the peers are doing. You know, there's so many different connections between some of these people. You know, you can say it's peer-reviewed, but, you know, is there an agenda from the other peers? You know, they're not necessarily going to go to someone and say, here, look at my work, you know, if they don't agree with them.
No,
but
they're
going to be more likely to go to friendly peers.
No, but peer-reviewed journals don't, in the scientific community, peer-reviewed journals don't give you the option of picking who's going to review your piece.
Well, that's
and
true.
In fact,
it depends on the journal, though.
The journal,
remember, each journal has their own standards.
Well, no, in the scientific community, there really is a set of standards for a journal that calls itself a peer-reviewed journal. And they really do look for the opposition.
It has to
clear the opposition. And here, from the study, just quote, because fructose does not stimulate insulin secretion from pancreatic B cells or beta cells, the consumption of foods and beverages containing fructose products, this is high fructose corn sugar, produces smaller postprandial insulin excursions than does consumption of glucose-containing carbohydrates. In other words, if you eat cane sugar, you produce more insulin than if you eat high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
Because leptin production is regulated by insulin response to meals, fructose consumption also reduces circulating leptin concentrations. The combined effects of lower circulating leptin and insulin in individuals who consume diets that are high in dietary fructose will therefore increase the likelihood of weight gain and its associated metabolic sequela.
Right. So you're saying that the more fructose you put into your body, the more you're likely to gain weight.
Yeah. And yeah. Bottom line. And it's...
Again, that's the personal responsibility of the person doing it.
But how can that be if you don't know it? I mean, what if the reality is here that, I mean, we see this epidemic of obesity in the United States started in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, all of
Actually,
the sweeteners...
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. There is some question about this epidemic of obesity. I mean, I know I've been looking at some of the figures lately, and I don't know. Some of them don't quite add up.
Yeah, I saw one of these spin pieces. You know, the CDC only called people and asked them over the phone. And
right,
people,
right. I had that
lie.
On that. But I mean, junk science right there. You know, they didn't corroborate the results of the test. They just called up people. Now, if I called you and I said, you know, how much do you weigh and how tall are you? You know, and I can't see you and I'm never going to see you again. Are you going to be honest with me? Or
probably. I'm anonymous.
My head?
Probably. Yeah. I'm anonymous. I mean, but our schools are reporting that our kids are obese.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
We just have to look around. I mean, come on. All you have to do is look around.
That's true, but I go to a lot of schools, remember, and I've spent years and years going to schools and, you know, I see kids that may be terribly overweight. They're maybe different reasons for it, whether it's a medical reason or you know, or they just stuff their face too much. But for the most part, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people and kids and adults that I see every year performing in front of them, I don't necessarily see this really bad problem. I see people that are overweight, much like myself, you know, but I don't see like an
We have 400,000 people a year in the United States dying from weight-related diseases.
Well, actually,
that's not a problem.
On that, though, you also have to consider, you know, you're saying it's weight-related diseases.
Right, like insulin,
exactly
like diabetes,
what, and
heart
where
disease.
Are your figures coming from? I have to look at that.
Okay, well, let's get into that. So we're talking to Sosa Whaley of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Tom Hartman here with you. 20 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to weigh in on this conversation. Mm-hmm. How do we, the people, protect ourselves from the predators among us? Stick around. We'll be right back.
Here here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at 2 of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Consider yourself to be under oath.
Yes or no? Do you believe nicotine is not addictive?
I believe nicotine is not addictive, yes.
Congressman,
Cigarettes and nicotine clearly do not meet the classic definitions of addiction.
I don't believe that nicotine or our products are addictive.
I believe that nicotine is not addictive. I believe that nicotine is not addictive.
And I too believe that nicotine is not addictive.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with So-So Wiley of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, an associate fellow with said organization, the CIE, back in 1996. It started back in 84. 1996, Ralph Nader's Public Citizen wrote a report saying, identifying $3.5 million the various think tanks had received in funding from pharmaceutical, medical device, biotechnology, and tobacco companies to, quote, help them pump out a steady stream of reports, fact sheets, op-ed articles, and newspaper, radio, and television advertisements purporting to document the FDA's deadly overcaution and bullying of manufacturers. And I take it you agree with that?
Myself.
Yeah.
Are you asking me if I agree with all that?
Well, if you agree with the position that the FDA is bullying manufacturers.
No. I believe that we're overregulated, but it's far beyond just the FDA. You know, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on there. You know, you can't just blame one bureaucracy for other things that are going on around us. I mean, you know, the FDA is run by people, and the people are the ones who determine these things. But we're overregulated on everything, overlawed, over everything.
Isn't it run by we the people?
We the people? You mean the country, we the people?
Yeah, I mean, we elect our representatives, and then they make decisions, and if we don't
right.
like those decisions, we throw them out of office. I mean,
well,
isn't that how
yeah,
it works?
So to speak, but, you know, I mean, now you're going down the road of, you know, how many people are actually electing these officials. I mean, as far as I can tell, you know, we really should kind of look at this and the numbers of people who are actually voting, and my guess is that we'd probably end up with a vote of no confidence if we actually looked at those real numbers.
But we haven't.
That's not
I mean,
what
we
we're
actually,
talking
we have
about.
We have a real electoral process. But here,
yeah.
but right to the issue here.
Right.
If it turns out that, as this article in the Journal of Clinical Nutrition seems to imply, mm-hmm. high fructose corn syrup is actually causing, as you know, again, to quote the article, is a part, in addition, fructose compared to the glucose is preferentially metabolized, blah, blah, blah.
This is the healthcare du jour today.
It induces insulin resistance, impaired glucose tolerance, mm-hmm. This is diabetes, type 2 diabetes,
right.
and hypertension, heart mm-hmm. disease. And these are the diseases that seem to be spiked. If it turns out.
Well, they're speculating. Please remember. I mean, you know.
No, this is not speculation.
These are studies that they did. I haven't looked at the studies yet. I'm in the process of examining this, and again with Stephen Malloy at junkscience.com. But you know, I mean, there may be something to some of these studies, but there's a whole lot of other aspects involved. You know, you can't just say fructose causes boom.
Here's my question: mm-hmm. If it does, mm-hmm. let's say that just like with tobacco, that mm-hmm. that this industry, that the fast food industry, which funds your institute. Yeah, Coca-Cola is one of your large funders.
I
have the list.
Money
I can tell you, Coca-Cola gives you guys money.
Yeah, great, okay.
And
fine, I like Coke, all right.
Okay. And Coca-Cola, when they made the change from old Coke to new Coke, went to high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
And if it turns out that the industry that is providing that, whether Coke knew it or not, the industry that's providing that product knew at the time or has known at any point in time that this stuff is actually going to kill people.
Uh-huh.
Shouldn't there be something that we the people can do about that?
Well, why don't we look at it this way? If I take too many aspirin, chances are I'm going to die. Now, or you know, Advil or
But aspirin is safe
say.
When it's used as directed. And what if this product is not safe when used as directed?
Well, you're going to direct people how to drink.
That's right.
Fruit that, stuff?
Sure. You say here, here's a bottle of it. Drink it. That's how it's marketed.
Right. That's
so we got a break here. We'll pick this up on the other side. I'll give you a chance to answer. Hang on. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to participate, So-So Wiley of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Early this month, MCI finished the overhaul of its books from its WorldCom era, and the damage from the company's fraud-laden collapse in 2002 totals a record $74.4 billion. The restatement completely wipes profits off the books from 2000 onward. MCI attributes more than $14 billion directly to the financial misdeeds of previous executives now facing criminal charges. The rest of its loss, it says, is from depreciation tied to the ongoing slump in the telecom sector as...
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Nearly 30,000 workers at Safeway and Giant grocery stores in the Baltimore and Washington, D.C. areas will not go on strike. Union employees at the chains overwhelmingly ratified a new contract yesterday, just hours before their old one expired. The deal includes a raise, but that's offset by a requirement to pay nearly twice as much for health insurance. And, similar to the contract in Southern California, this deal creates a lower tier of pay and benefits for new hires.
More news from the worldwide student and labor Stop Killer Coke campaign. Since March 15th, dozens of union workers have been participating in hunger strikes outside bottling plants in six Colombian cities. They're protesting Coca-Cola's alleged policy of layoffs, intimidation, and collaboration with Colombian paramilitary groups. The company has pressured more than 500 workers into resigning in exchange for a lump sum payment. Most union leaders have refused to resign or take the money.
10 descendants of slaves brought to America in the 18th and 19th centuries are suing Lloyd's of London, the company that insured the slave ships. The lawsuit claims Lloyd's helped enable the African-American slave trade by covering the ships used to transport them. It's not the first time the insurer's been sued for slavery reparations, but in this case, at least one of the plaintiffs has DNA evidence proving his slave ancestry, as well as copies of a manifest linking his ancestorship to Lloyd's of London. The lead attorney is also a reparations expert. He negotiated a $2 billion settlement with Swiss companies that profited from Nazi slave labor during World War II and is also involved in a case seeking compensation for victims of apartheid in South Africa.
Xerox is facing a lawsuit over color. A federal judge has granted class action status to all black Xerox sales representatives between 1997 and the present who feel they've been affected by an alleged pattern of racial discrimination in assignment of sales territories, promotions, and compensation. As many as 1,000 workers may join the initial six plaintiffs, one of which says he was told by a Xerox general manager he was assigned to the Bronx because, quote, blacks in the Bronx go hand in hand. Xerox denies all charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Between December and today, an estimated 1.1 million unemployed Americans exhausted their jobless benefits, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Now an average of about 80,000 per week are running out of unemployment benefits. Among those still receiving compensation, more than a third already live below the poverty line, and 40% have no health insurance. Half of those in this predicament lived above the poverty line and had health coverage before they lost their jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
With my mind on you. All your friends call.
And welcome back. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio, the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Sosa Whaley of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And Sosa, we got a couple of phone calls here I want to get to, but first, I've got a bottle of aspirin right here in front of me.
Good. And there's how much to take, right?
Well, and there's about 20 lines here about all the bad things that'll happen to me if I take too much.
Absolutely. So maybe we should regulate aspirin a little bit more, huh?
Well, no. I think that this is just fine. If I take this, I have been informed if I were to take this entire bottle, it says right on here, if I do that, it's going to cause bleeding.
And you feel comfortable with that, right? I mean, you feel comfortable with all those warnings, but you still might take the aspirin if you had a headache.
Sure, because what it says is if you have a headache, take two of them. But it says, you know, if you want to kill yourself, take an entire bottle. Now, Coke does not say if you want to get fat, drink 20 of these a day.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we're talking common sense here, you know.
No, we're not talking common sense because people don't know what fructose is.
Well, I mean, what you're kind of focusing on. one particular thing.
Well, that was the topic that you wanted to come on and talk about.
You can't just blame Coke. You can't just blame McDonald's. You can't just blame this or that. You know.
No, but what about blaming corn syrup?
Why would I blame corn syrup?
No, I'm saying, I'm suggesting, I'm willing to blame. Corn syrup is in everything now, and it wasn't in anything 20 years ago, and all of a sudden people are sick and obese. What?
And you're making a direct correlation between corn syrup and obesity. Is that
I am saying that the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition just made that correlation, yes. And I'm asking you the question, if it turns out that it's true that this scientific journal just published this report, are you suggesting that, number one, our government shouldn't regulate this or at least require, like with aspirin, that we have some sort of warning so we are can be informed consumers? And number two, that people shouldn't be allowed to sue?
Okay, well, that's a lot there. Okay, first off, let me just make it clear, okay? If the evidence shows that fructose is the big boogeyman that you want to make it out to be, or these journals want to make it out to be, well, maybe we should take a closer look at it in terms of, you know, if we can definitely prove that it's caused all this obesity and this is the main thing. But, you know,
I
don't think that's going to happen.
But hang on just a second. If today... I mean, the official number is 400,000 people a year die from obesity. Let's say that those are wildly exaggerated, and it's only 400 people a year, not 400,000. It's only 400 people a year. That means today somebody's going to die.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to die from a lot of different things.
Somebody's going to die. Well, sure, and I know a lot of murderers use that as their excuse. You know,
well,
other people kill too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But you can go that way if you want.
But you can't. See, you can't. I mean, that logic doesn't work.
Right. I mean,
somebody's going to die today, and you're suggesting that they shouldn't have had an opportunity not to die. They shouldn't have had the information. I'm suggesting, what about the precautionary principle? What about saying if there's any evidence that this might be dangerous to us, we should find out about it before we release it on the American populace?
No, I understand that, and I totally disagree with the precautionary principle, because, I mean, we never would have tried eating anything, and we wouldn't have survived through anything. I was born in 1955. I've been drinking Coke. I've been eating at McDonald's. I've been doing all the things that you hear a lot in the media about, you know, people going out and it causes all these problems. My weight has gone up and down, you know, and as far as I'm concerned at this point in time, I'm living a pretty healthy life. I'm almost 50. I'm hitting the half century mark. I'm in pretty damn good health when you come right down to it, despite some overweight and stuff. That's my fault. The fact that I know, what are you saying, that people are that ignorant that they don't understand that something?
No, I'm not saying that people are that ignorant. I mean,
you know, you're saying that people need to be told absolutely everything when we go into the ma and pop restaurants.
I
go to my grandmother's to eat, do I need to have her tell me exactly what's in all that stuff? Because
there might be
some fructose.
I am not that irrational. I don't think anybody else is.
I would hope not, you know, and I would hope that most other people weren't either. That's how you protect yourself, by educating yourself.
But how do you educate yourself?
Not by going, this or this is true or false.
How do you educate yourself when an industry that manufactures a product which they know to be harmful...
Mm-hmm.
Hires front groups like yours.
I'm
talking about fructose right now. Front groups like yours to go out and do PR like you're trying to do.
Fructose is that dangerous? I mean, you're
it sure looks like it, according to this journal.
We should ban it. I kind of don't understand.
I'm not saying
we
should ban it. I'm saying we should inform people about it. Let's take a couple calls here. Vin in Santa Fe is on the line. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Vin, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, both of you and disagree with both of you. First of all, the answer is critical thinking in schools, Tom, and you discussed this the other day.
Sure.
As I used to teach college, and we used to do something called the thinking aloud paired problem solving method. You got to make people problem solve in school before they can problem solve in their life.
Yeah, and we no longer teach that.
Very true, exactly.
You know, and that's not happening.
That's
sure.
True.
But in order to make a rational decision about anything, you have to have information.
Yeah, and I agree, first of all, with your guest on the biology, that sometimes peer review can be biased. I'm a biologist, and I published in peer-reviewed journals. On the other hand, any biologist worth his salt knows that fructose does not trigger the diabetogenic insulin secretion mechanism like glucose does. And so that study probably has a lot of foundation. What do we do about it? I'm not sure.
Thank you.
You know, other than teaching people to think critically. But I think it's got to be put out there.
Yes.
Okay, great.
You know, and I think the FDA is a problem here, because your guest suggested that we're over-regulating. I think we're inconsistently regulating.
Oh, that's a much better way to put it. Thank you.
Yeah, for example, there's a lot of interest alternative medicine and herbs. My wife is a doctor of oriental medicine, and the FDA neglects this area tremendously and concentrates on Western pharmaceuticals and is heavily, heavily influenced by lobby groups. And it shouldn't be, the FDA should not be an organization that's influenced by lobby groups. And I think that's an atrocity. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Well said, Vin. Thank you very much. I do, too, which is...
Yeah, very good caller there.
Yeah.
Made a lot of good points.
Smart guy. Let's take Brian in New Jersey. Hey, Brian.
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I think it's going to open a whole big can of worms if, and I mean, hey, that's great. I would want it to open a big can of worms if we can sue for the obesity, but you bring up, you know, you have RGBH as well, which is, you know, bovine growth hormone. That's not
there's a lot about
killing
that
people
now, too.
That could be. And if we start suing over the obesity factor of the corn syrup, it could definitely open up that huge bag of worms, and agribusiness, as you know, is not going to want that.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Well,
yeah, that would cause a real rift in food production as it is. I mean, we're having enough trouble trying to stay on top of it, but we don't need a lot of incorrect
information. Oh, I think we do need that. I think that we should be regulating and putting RGBH-free milk labels, which they're not.
Now here's an interesting fact that I'll bet neither one of you know, Brian or Sosa. Monsanto, before they brought RGBH to the marketplace, approached the Reagan administration, and specifically with George Bush Sr. when he was vice president, approached his office and said, we want regulations on this product. Mm-hmm. And they lobbied aggressively with the vice president's office to get regulations through FDA, USDA, and one other department, I forget which one it was, specifically on genetically modified organisms and around this kind of a product. And the reason why was because once it's regulated, they can't be sued.
This is true.
And so what you've got is you've got a corporation going in and saying, you know, well, I don't want to characterize Monsanto, but
are you implying that they did not have our better interest at heart?
If they had our better interest in heart, then their directors should be out of business, because by law, a corporation has to place profit above our better interests. The Supreme Court has ruled that.
I mean, that's for all the investors and stuff too.
The investors don't have any legal obligation, but there's this thing called fiduciary responsibility that the CEO and senior executives have and the board of directors have, and if they don't place profit above all other considerations as the first thing, then, you know, they're not, I mean, those are the rules of the game,
right?
Like,
well,
it or
the
not.
Same thing would apply, though, for your corporation that runs your radio show. Don't they have to go for profit to make sure that you can stay on the air?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all the same.
Absolutely. But if people listen to my radio show, are they going to get sick?
Thank you. Exactly.
Are they going to get sick from...
From listening to the radio show. I mean, you know, we've got...
True. I mean,
not necessarily,
I guess it depends on some of your listeners.
Maybe mentally. Okay. Good one, Brian. Thank you. I'm going to move along here.
1-866-889-8894.
And we have Ken in Asheville. Is that North Carolina, South Carolina? I always mix those up, Ken.
Tennessee,
okay. Oh, Nashville.
Yeah, that's different.
That's a different one. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Well, I love some questions. Basically, and have your guest answer them, or you answer them and discuss them. The first thing is something that's a dichotomy. When it comes to many things, you're sticking dose or corn syrup solids into everything. For instance, kidney beans. You buy kidney beans right now, and you're going to have cane sugar and dextrose. And to be honest, you don't need any of that stuff in there. It cans well without it.
But it might not taste as good.
It might not sell as well. Like me, that's a problem. The thing is, and we've discussed this with emails before, Tom, my father was a corn syrup executive, and I am a home brewer, and I was always told that fructose was fruit sugar.
It is. It is. One of the point things that this study points out is that people who consume lots of these new soft drinks that are sweetened with apple juice concentrate are getting the same fructose hit that people are who consume corn syrup.
So we should get rid of apple juice then.
Well, that we should. I'm not suggesting we should get rid of anything. I'm suggesting
we should inform people.
You
have to take it to the final. You know, you have to take it to the worst possible scenario. You know, to try to pull everybody back and say we need to be reasonable. Yes, we need the information, but we've got to get it out to. So, go ahead.
Yeah, did you make your point, Ken?
No, I don't know.
Go ahead, Ken.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I think we're losing you, Ken. I'm gonna have to move along to Josh in Ohio.
Yeah.
If you got a better, cleaner signal, call us back in. 1-866-889-8894. Josh in Ohio is on the line. Hey, Josh.
Hi. Well, I think it's pretty simple, in my opinion. This these right-wing neoconservative types worship profit, and if you happen to get killed by it, you're roadkill, and that's too bad. And they're into survival of the fittest and social economic Darwinism and all that, and it just doesn't matter about public health in the way that it should.
So what about
it,
you know?
Matter, but.
What about that? So I mean, if are you suggesting that, you know, if somebody doesn't have the ability to read the scientific papers and discover that fructose might be bad for them, that's they should just be weeded out of the gene pool?
Should they be weeded out of the gene pool?
Yeah.
Well, I hate to say it, but I mean, you know, survival of the fittest and stuff. I'm not saying that people should, you know, because of their own ignorance. That isn't necessarily their part.
But it's not just their ignorance. It's also multi-million dollar, in some cases
right.
multi-billion dollar, advertising, marketing, and PR campaigns.
We're so seduced by advertising. I mean,
well, there's a reason why people buy advertising.
What?
There's a reason why people buy advertising. It works. If it didn't work, you wouldn't have billions of dollars spent on it literally every day in America.
Absolutely, just as you have advertising on your program as well.
That's right, because it works.
Promote their products.
That's right, because it works.
And so advertising is bad? Is that what you're saying, too?
I'm saying if you have somebody advertising a product that is harmful,
right.
then I think that we, the people, have not only the right, but the obligation to do something
and
about that. And you're saying
right
that we
now,
shouldn't.
You're declaring right at this moment in time that fructose is harmful and it should be taken off the market, period. Is that what you're declaring?
No, number one, I've never said it should be taken off
okay.
the market. I said we should be informed about it. And number
right.
two, I don't know for sure if it's harmful or not. What I'm saying is that this article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition
right.
clearly implies that. And studies going back several years clearly imply that there may be a relationship between heart disease, obesity, and type 2 diabetes,
again,
which is killing people today, and this product.
The jury is out on that for me. I really have to take a look at it. You know, but of course, I'm going to be examining a lot of this over the next 30 days as I do McDonald's. And it's not just issues like that. You know, each day I'm going to document. I'm going to look at a different subject. You know, I'll put this on film. I'm going to do a diet.
You're doing a McDonald's diet, as I recall.
30 days, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, 30 days,
okay.
Only McDonald's. I will allow myself spring water from my own well at home. Other than that, everything else comes from McDonald's.
Oh, but it's the soft drinks that are causing the obesity and the heart disease.
Well,
you're not going to drink the soft drinks?
I'm going to take a look at that, you know, and I'm going to eat some fructose, too. And so far, I don't have any heart disease. I'm a little overweight, but that's because I really like chocolate a lot.
Uh-huh. And Josh in Ohio, you made your point. I'm going to move along here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Josh.
Thanks a lot. Anne Marie is in Louisiana. Hey, Anne Marie.
Oh, a woman.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, great. One of the things I was wondering is why is it that when they first brought out the new Coke, and a lot of people said that they didn't like it, they brought back Coca-Cola Classic.
And thank goodness they did.
I'm sorry? Go ahead.
Thank goodness they did. I preferred that.
Okay. But they seem to keep the old packaging. They dropped the word Classic. And now it's corn syrup and Coke, regular Coke.
Well, that was when they came back with Coke Classic. It was corn syrup from the very beginning. I mean, I lived in Atlanta at the time, and the kind of conspiracy theorists in town, because that's where Coke is headquartered, were all, you know, saying, hey, this is just a big, PR campaign to shift from cane syrup to corn syrup.
Right.
And it's going to slightly change the taste, and so they're going to interrupt the stream for a while. And that was the conspiracy theory. I mean, who knows if it was true or not, but, you know, you look back and, you know, maybe, but anyhow,
well,
your point, Anne Marie.
That they originally used corn syrup in the original Coke.
No, they originally used cane sugar.
Right.
And when the government started subsidizing the production of corn to the tune of billions of dollars, it costs about $3 a barrel a bushel right now to produce corn in the United States, but it sells for $2 a bushel. And the reason why is because you and I, out of our tax dollars, are paying that $1 difference as a result of the lobbying by about four of the nation's largest corporations handing out money in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that I wanted to mention was when they tried to switch everybody from butter because of heart disease, and they came out with margarine, they have neglected to tell everybody that the heat process in which they make margarine, is a major cancer.
You're absolutely right, Anne Marie. Thanks. Good point. You know,
thank you, Anne Marie.
Sometimes there's unintended consequences.
We've
only got 20 seconds here.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the last word and let you wrap this thing up.
Anne Marie, you know, she had a point there. You know, but we've made a lot of boogeymen out of a lot of different things. We have to start being more practical, think more critically, and learn about these things, and don't just take anything at face value, even if it's a peer-reviewed journal.
Okay.
Please put that peer-reviewed in quotations.
Okay, well said. So Whaley, Competitive Enterprise Institute, the website is, do you know real quick?
CEI.org.
CEI.org. Thanks a lot for being on the program today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New UN regulations for commercial shipping address a major problem with tiny stowaways. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global trade and shipping has given rise to a global problem with foreign organisms that travel in the ballast water of ships. The United Nations recently adopted the first international standards to deal with this problem. Ship owners and ports will have more than 5 years to put them into practice, but these new regulations for handling ballast water will be mandatory. Ships routinely take in ballast water when they're traveling without cargo, and they dump it when they get to their destinations. The ballast water is essential for keeping the ship stable at sea. The problem is that the water is usually filled with plants and animals, and when they're released into foreign waters, they can wreak havoc on native species. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. Corbett says the regulations show that the international community is responding to some environmental effects of global commerce. He says the regulations set mandatory standards for treating ballast water to filter out or kill invading organisms before the ballast is dumped out. He says these are the first regulations of their kind, and if the global standards don't provide enough protection for coastal ecosystems, he says the rules allow countries to set even stricter standards.
The recognition in this treaty
that regions may set stricter standards is really very important and does demonstrate that the international community understands the nature of this global problem and its regional differences.
The new ballast water rules were adopted in February by the UN's International Maritime Organization. Corbett says ships will have 5 to 12 years to adopt treatment technologies that meet the new standards. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
In broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Yes, indeed, folks, if a corporation sells a product that they know is harmful to you, and they lie to you about it, and they spend millions of dollars to hire PR flacks and advertising to promote it to you, it's your fault. 1-866-889-8894. Let's see here. Frank in Fairfield, Maine is on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I was just listening to this last lady and that you had on, and it's that Reagan Bush sophistry where, like, with Reagan would come out and sort of ridicule anybody who was against him.
Yeah.
And then Bush, let's study it some more.
Well, you know, I want to give her some credit. I think she honestly believes that it's a matter of, you know, personal choice, integrity,
but,
or whatever. I mean,
but
you know,
so many people are. They just really don't have a lot of the knowledge. And the only thing that we have are peer reviews, clinical studies, and I think that this evidence should be published widely and that warnings should be on these products, because if you look around, look at the porkers running around in America right now.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy. I've never seen as many obese children in my life.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I remember one kid in my school who was really, really fat, and he was mercilessly ridiculed.
Yeah, the psychological damage that's inflicted on these poor kids, and it's no coincidence. It isn't a coincidence that this corn syrup was introduced, and then all of a sudden we have people. I mean, kids eat a lot regardless. Granted, they don't play outside.
Well, also now we've got school systems who are so desperate for cash that they're putting soft drink machines in the schools, you know, to get a little bit off the top from that. And you know, is it more corn syrup or is it more calories or whatever? Anyhow, Frank, good point. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio. Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush reversed course under heavy pressure on Tuesday and agreed to let his national security adviser, Condoleezza Rice, give sworn testimony before the September 11th commission. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney also agreed to meet together privately with the full panel, abandoning their earlier insistence that they would meet only with the commission's chairman and vice chairman. Rice was likely to testify toward the end of next week, with Bush and Cheney following sometime after that, a senior administration official said. In one of the bloodiest days and weeks for the U.S. military, five troops died when a bomb exploded under their military vehicle west of Baghdad on Wednesday. At least four foreign nationals, including one American, were killed in a separate attack, and some of the bodies were burned, beaten, and hanged from a bridge. A military spokesman declined to say what nationality the soldiers were, but the vast majority of troops operating in the Al Anbar province west of Baghdad are U.S. Marines. Treasury Secretary John Snow reignited the political argument over U.S. companies shipping jobs overseas Tuesday with comments that outsourcing was an integral part of a global trading system. Snow's comments in economically hard-hit Ohio were published as George W. Bush was delivering a speech defending his free trade policies in Wisconsin, a state that has lost 80,000 manufacturing jobs. Asked in a newspaper interview whether he thought outsourcing of jobs to other countries made the country strong, Snow replied, "It's one aspect of trade, and there can't be any doubt about the fact that trade makes America strong." In a high-octane election year fight, Democrat John Kerry on Tuesday sought to lay the blame for soaring gas prices on a resistant Republican administration, while George W. Bush warned of higher gas taxes from some in the other party in Washington. The presumptive Democratic nominee complained that Bush has not taken steps to drive prices down, calling on the administration to stop pumping oil into the nation's emergency stockpile until Americans see cheaper prices. The administration has rejected that notion. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Treasury Secretary John Snow was set to say on Friday that frivolous lawsuits had caused the U.S. ladder industry to fold before a Small Business Administration conference. Snow planned to say there is not a single company left in the United States that makes ladders. The lawsuits got to be too much for the ladder industry. But when the department discovered there were some 11 producers selling $850 million worth of ladders in the United States, the speech was changed. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking? But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something. So George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine. Since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no. Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio, the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Today is a landmark day. For some over a million people have wiped out their unemployment benefits. And to talk with us about that today, we have Senator John Corzine of New Jersey. Senator, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you.
Unfortunately, on a subject that's not very attractive on the day before April Fool's.
I'd say it's tragic.
It is.
I mean, the Children's Defense Fund just released some startling statistics about this. I don't know if you have them in front of you.
I don't, but the idea that people who want to work are out actively searching to find work in a difficult economy, one that is in transition, that we're pulling away from the long-term unemployed in this country and their families just as borders on immorality, in my view, and particularly in the context of 8.2 million Americans unemployed and, you know, more long-term unemployment than has ever been the case, 2 million people and a whole bunch that have even stopped looking. So we just, you know, just got a context that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it really is tragic.
Well, the question that I have about this is why? Yeah, you know, why not why are we losing the jobs? I mean, we know, you know, the conservative economic policies are just driving, you know, we're revisiting the 1890s here all over again. But, and by the way, I'll let our listeners know if they'd like to comment on this or ask you a question. The number is 1-866-889-8894. But, Senator Corzine, why is it that this administration and the Republicans who have such a stranglehold on the House and Senate that, you know, essentially nothing happens if they don't let something out of committee, why is it that they are not renewing unemployment benefits in an election year? I mean, this seems silly. Is it just to keep down the unemployment statistics?
My view is that they have lost track of their own self-interest. You probably know that in the House, which is controlled by Tom DeLay and other relative strong ideologues, on February 4th of this year, they actually passed extension of unemployment benefits by an overwhelming majority. We did the same thing in February in the Senate. When the broad Republican Party actually gets a chance to join with Democrats, they do on extending benefits. But because of the leadership and its ideological nature, that there's no role for government, because of the lack of the president's participation in any kind of leadership way with regard to this issue, I guess they're worried about budget deficits. If they were, I could give them some suggestions on what they ought to do with some of their tax proposals.
Well, this represents about one day of the amount of money that we're spending in Iraq. We're not talking big bucks here. We're talking $1,100, a month to families. It's not.
It's mind-boggling, and I find for an administration that wants to encourage the private sector, this is encouraging the private sector. This is giving people who are in search, active search for employment, the means to maintain some modicum of quality of life while they're out there actively pursuing going back to work and contributing to America.
Yeah, well, help me understand this. If the House and Senate have both passed legislation to extend unemployment benefits, is the president vetoing it? Is he protesting? What's happening?
The leaderships, the respective leaderships of the House and Senate, have to put those bills together.
I see. In conference,
and we put
combine it into one
bill in the Senate, and on another bill in the House, and those two are two ships passing in the night. They didn't actually go to conference together, where the Senate and the House sit down and compromise these things. What we need to do is have a clean extension of these unemployment benefits. We've been trying to do that over and over and over again in the Senate, and just hasn't been able to be brought up because of the leadership, the Republican leadership, refusing to actually bring it up because the president doesn't want to have it happen. If he wanted it to happen, we could get it done in 30 minutes.
I'm looking at the numbers here. This is since December 2003, when the phase out started, about 1.1 million people have exhausted their benefits and are no longer eligible. And according to the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, these individuals and their families are losing an average of $1,100 a month. If you take 1.1 million and multiply it by $1,100 a month, you come out to somewhere in the neighborhood of just a little over $1 billion.
Right.
And we are spending, depending on whose numbers you look at, but since we first entered Iraq, we've spent a little over, or we've allocated anyway, a little over $150 billion. So this literally is 2 days of Iraq. Literally.
And the equally disturbing element is that if you were really interested in stimulating the economy, or you were really interested in not pulling strength out of the economy, you'd want this $1 billion to be going into the system and generating demand that ends up generating additional demand.
Sure.
Unemployment benefits probably are 100% spent.
Yeah, it would boost the economy.
Boost the economy.
Yeah.
And, there's a concept in economics. I'm not that smart about this stuff, but it's a multiplier effect that it's almost 1.75% or 1.75 time the money spent to boost the economy. Well, you get the reverse of that if you don't have these benefits going on, and that's exactly what we're doing. And it's at a time when we ought to be really pushing to try to get employment going in this country. The failure to create jobs is just a failure on the part of government to have the right kinds of economic policies, and I think it's time for a change.
Yeah, I agree. Senator John Corzine of New Jersey, two quick questions. One, what can we do about this? What can the average person do?
Well, I'd like to think that folks ought to send cards and letters to all of their representatives. This one is a no-brainer in my view, and I think actually the votes in the House and the Senate reflect that. We need to make sure that people are commenting in talk radio on all avenues. We need to make sure that the facts about this are understood in the context of their local communities. In New Jersey, there are going to be about 100,000 workers who will lose their unemployment benefits if these insurance benefits aren't extended. It's about $450 million worth of federal government dollars coming into the states because the extended benefits are paid entirely by the states. And we ought to try to find ways to make sure that the White House hears that this is something that they need to be addressing. It is a real failure on the part of the administration to take economic leadership in a place where it's not just financial numbers. It's real people that are getting hurt.
Yeah,
and
now,
hurt badly.
My second question with regard to this is George Bush has been out on the campaign trail bragging up the fact that unemployment statistics are going down. And it seems to me that they're going down because people are falling off the unemployment rolls. If we extend, and therefore are no longer counted as unemployed, if we, they call them discouraged workers. So if
right.
we extend these
benefits. The highest
benefits,
number in the history of their statistics that have been kept.
Yeah, I mean, this is the worst economic situation that this country has been in, certainly in my 53 years, and I think in the history of the United, well, since the 20s and 30s. I mean,
right.
You know, and then we could go back to the Great Recession of the 1850s.
Certainly the poorest performance in job creation.
Yeah, so if they add 1 million people to the unemployment rolls, doesn't that cause the unemployment rate to all of a sudden pop up and embarrass the Bush administration?
It will. These people are already included in the unemployment rate. It won't change.
But they're going to start falling off fairly quickly.
They're actually may start falling off into the no longer looking for a job because
right, and then
they've
and then
given up. Then that actually might reduce the rate, which may be why the.
Right, which looks good for the
do this.
Yeah, it looks good for the administration. They get to say, "Hey, look at you know, the unemployment rate is still going down." And
I tell you, Tom, we have the lowest participation in about 25 years of people working relative to the population and in America.
It's and scary.
You know, that's just as one of the ongoing swings and misses by this administration. Economic leadership of the folks in Congress.
Well said. We're speaking with Senator John Corzine of New Jersey. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. Dave in Humboldt County, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, gentlemen. Senator, I do believe, I think Tom is touching on something here that may be being misperceived, but that is that the Bush administration is claiming that unemployment is going down and is turning around. And they're claiming it based on the fact that if they don't renew the or extend the unemployment insurance, then that person is no longer on the books of the unemployed if he's not drawing unemployment insurance. I think that's the way they're counting it, but I have a further thought for you guys, if you have a minute.
Okay. Is that your point, Dave?
That was the point on that, if you do. I'm concerned very much so that we here up here, and I guess all over America from the calls you're getting are being programmed by Hannity and Limbaugh and Reagan and all. And they're trying to convince us, I think, that to be concerned at all about the plight of the poor or the underprivileged is to be a socialist, a communist or something, that only those true Americans who exploit are what we're really all about as Americans. And
yeah.
I think people are buying it.
Well, there's the counter program too, Dave. I mean, you're listening to us, I assume, on KGOE there
that is correct.
In Northern California.
There are two programs that we do get up here that do offer us a rational alternative to that.
Yeah.
But I honestly believe we're going to have to start calling these right-wing programs and promising them that we hate gays and love Bush before we get on, but then forcing them to deal with reality.
Dave, I want to ask the senator to comment on that. We've only got about a minute and a half left here with Senator John Corzine of New Jersey. Do you think that this is really a political, a Karl Rove strategy? Do you think it's a possibility here? Whoa! Oh, I'm sorry. I lost Senator Corzine. Ah. Rats. It's Tom Hartman. I forgot to push the VIP button. It's my apologies. Okay. Speaking of apologies, moving right along, with the major media from the New York Times on down, I just want to finish that thought. I am absolutely and utterly convinced that the Bush administration is willing to sacrifice the lives of 1.1 million people in order to simply get their statistics down. It's just no doubt in my mind that's what's up, that that's what they're up to, that their intention is to drive down the unemployment, the official unemployment statistic, so that they can say, hey, look at unemployment is going down. And it's part of the big lie strategy that the conservatives are promulgating, and particularly in the Republican Party, but right across the, Zell Miller, the Democrat, he's part of this thing. And look at things are getting better. Corporations are making record profits. The Dow Industrials are doing okay. Second year in a row, double-digit profits for corporations in the United States. And the unemployment statistics are looking better. Seems like a plan, eh, for re-election? This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You.
What?
Who is Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon. One small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the real free speech zone. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 25 minutes past the hour. We're back with you. Senator Corzine was only going to be on with us for 20 minutes, so we... Yeah, it's one of the folks in the chat room goes, Tom hung up on a senator! Yeah. Well, I guess every now and then, you know, it's... Anyway, he made his point and he did it very well. This is... Today marks the final phase-out of unemployment benefits for more than 1 million Americans. Now, this means that 622,000 children will suffer financial hardships, you know, as members of their families. And the $1,100 per month, this is a typical unemployment benefit, barely, says Deborah Coulter Ortiz, Director of Family Income at the Children's Defense Fund. She says this barely provides enough to feed and clothe the child and to pay the family's rent. These are basic essentials, and they represent the very minimum of an appropriate federal response to the prolonged economic problems facing our country. Record numbers of Americans are losing unemployment benefits, and no new jobs are in sight. Which, you know, gets us right down to the bottom line. I mean, you know, the conservatives believe that the free market will take care of everything, forgetting that there's no such thing as a free market, that the marketplace exists in the context. It actually is not even exists in the context. The marketplace is something that is created at the macro level by government. Sure, at a micro level, hey, you've got something I want, I got something you want, we can trade. You could argue that that's a marketplace. But the marketplace that employs people, the marketplace that provides the economic engine for a nation, is a marketplace that requires a court system so that contracts can be enforced, that requires that states authorize the creation of unions of capital called corporations, where capital can aggregate, where people with money can throw it all together and reduce their risks and go out and do things. The limited liability corporation. It's a system that absolutely requires that there be a stable currency, that there, you know, it just goes on and on, that we have rational tax laws, that there be a commons that is available to those who want to play the game of business. That is to say that there are streets that they can drive on, there are highways over which trucks can transport their goods, and railways over which railroads can carry their goods, and airways regulated and controlled and kept safe by the Federal Aviation Administration on which they can ship their goods. None of this stuff is a free market. I mean, this is the marketplace. And you say, well, it's all about free trade, and it goes beyond trade. I mean, the question, does the government play a role in making sure that, I can hear it now. He said, making sure. Oh, my God, he's a socialist. No, does the government play a role in making sure that we have access to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? You know, it's really interesting. John Locke said back in 1724, in his second treatise on government, he said, life, liberty, and private property. And Thomas Jefferson changed that to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's the first time in the history of civilization that a government document referred to the happiness of its citizens as being an obligation of its government. That somehow we collectively, since we are now going to rule us, we've thrown off the kings, we've thrown off the feudal lords, we've thrown off the theocrats, we are going to rule us. We're going to do it in a way that improves collectively the quality of our life. And this is just the common sense in which the idea of unemployment insurance is grounded. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. You are in the center of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Accept no imitations. And stick around. We'll be right back.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking?
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Nearly 30,000 workers at Safeway and Giant grocery stores in the Baltimore and Washington, D.C. areas will not go on strike. Union employees at the chains overwhelmingly ratified a new contract yesterday, just hours before their old one expired. The deal includes a raise, but that's offset by a requirement to pay nearly twice as much for health insurance. And, similar to the contract in Southern California, this deal creates a lower tier of pay and benefits for new hires.
More news from the worldwide student and labor Stop Killer Coke campaign. Since March 15th, dozens of union workers have been participating in hunger strikes outside bottling plants in six Colombian cities. They're protesting Coca-Cola's alleged policy of layoffs, intimidation, and collaboration with Colombian paramilitary groups. The company has pressured more than 500 workers into resigning in exchange for a lump sum payment. Most union leaders have refused to resign or take the money.
10 descendants of slaves brought to America in the 18th and 19th centuries are suing Lloyd's of London, the company that insured the slave ships. The lawsuit claims Lloyd's helped enable the African-American slave trade by covering the ships used to transport them. It's not the first time the insurer's been sued for slavery reparations, but in this case, at least one of the plaintiffs has DNA evidence proving his slave ancestry, as well as copies of a manifest linking his ancestor's ship to Lloyd's of London. The lead attorney is also a reparations expert. He negotiated a $2 billion settlement with Swiss companies that profited from Nazi slave labor during World War II and is also involved in a case seeking compensation for victims of apartheid in South Africa.
Xerox is facing a lawsuit over color. A federal judge has granted class action status to all black Xerox sales representatives between 1997 and the present who feel they've been affected by an alleged pattern of racial discrimination in assignment of sales territories, promotions, and compensation. As many as 1,000 workers may join the initial six plaintiffs, one of which says he was told by a Xerox general manager he was assigned to the Bronx because, quote, blacks in the Bronx go hand in hand. Xerox denies all charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Between December and today, an estimated 1.1 million unemployed Americans exhausted their jobless benefits, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Now an average of about 80,000 per week are running out of unemployment benefits. Among those still receiving compensation, more than a third already live below the poverty line, and 40% have no health insurance. Half of those in this predicament lived above the poverty line and had health coverage before they lost their jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I have to confess, I started my career in radio in 1968 as a country western DJ. And I, at the time, I didn't know anything about the music. I was, you know, totally a rock and roll teenager. And I've come to love it, I confess. Anyhow, let's talk about conservative economics here. for a few moments. There's this big thing about the Bush gas tax. I just want to touch on a couple of quick points here. Number one, what's the real tax that Americans are paying? And note here that I've got, I don't know the source of this, but anyhow, it suggests the real gas tax Americans are paying is Bush's 29-cent gas tax, that basically being the increase in the price of gas per gallon that has happened over the last year, and I'm not sure exactly how much it's gone up since Bush became president, but it's gone up substantially. And some are suggesting that this is a conspiracy on the part of the oil industry. After all, 46 of the Bush campaign pioneers, by the pioneers being the people who raised over $200,000 for George Bush, are oil and gas executives. More than 40 pioneers and rangers from the oil and gas industry have committed to bundle at least $4.6 million to Bush-Cheney 2004 Incorporated, and will likely raise far more than that since bundlers generally exceed their commitment. Five of Bush's top 25, quote, career patrons, end quote, are oil multimillionaires. And, there's a list here, and you don't need to hear the list. But according to the, and so what's going on here? Well, according to Oil Price Information Service, this is, you know, one of these industry groups that provides information to the oil industry. U.S. petroleum refineries are on the threshold of completing their best calendar in several decades. Refiners and integrated oil companies may be posting record profits. The Detroit Free Press, March 30th. U.S. refiners such as Valero Energy Corp and ConocoPhillips may post record profits this year as a surge in gasoline prices outpaces the rise in the crude oil they buy to make the fuel. And here's another story from the Detroit Free Press. Valero, the third largest U.S. refiner, may have the most profitable year this year in its 24-year history. And ConocoPhillips, the largest U.S. refiner, you've been seeing those ads on TV for ConocoPhillips? You know, whenever I see an ad on TV, I go, is that my money they're spending? It's like these Medicare ads. Anyhow, ConocoPhillips, the largest U.S. refiner, may have its highest annual profit since the 2002 merger that created the company, according to analysts surveyed by Thomson Financial. Why is this? Well, we've got two situations going on here. One, the oil companies are recording record profits right across the board. And the reason why, of course, is because Ronald Reagan suspended enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, and we never got it back. So, for example, you know, ConocoPhillips in 2002 did this merger. And what we're getting are companies. See, it used to be illegal in this country for you to both drill for the oil, pump the oil, transport the oil, refine the oil, and sell the oil at retail. That was considered a trust. That's why the antitrust laws were put on the books in the first place, was to stop John Rockefeller. And the state of Ohio threw him out, declared illegal what he was doing. And it is these monopolistic behavior where you have these corporations that are so large and so powerful that nobody can take them on. Nobody can competently compete against them. And so they can basically set whatever price they want. And the consumers be damned. So that's one issue. The other, though, and I think it's the larger issue, there's actually two other issues that have to do with this gas price. The second one is that oil is denominated in dollars on the international marketplace. And the Bush administration, noting that we are not only running record deficits in as much as the government is spending more than it is bringing in because of the Bush tax cuts for the rich, we are now piling up debt of about $500 million a year, and that doesn't include the money that we're sucking, the $200-300 billion we're sucking out of Medicare. The actual deficit is around $800 billion a year. That we're borrowing this money from our children and grandchildren so that Bush can give it to his wealthy buddies in the form of tax cuts so that they can make these contributions to him. And number one, what that's doing is it's causing the rest of the world to look at us and say, you know, that country is on the edge of going broke. And when that happens, the value of your currency drops. We also have these huge trade deficits
We are buying more from other countries than we are selling to them. So they end up with a bunch of extra dollars of ours. And all these dollars, you know, there's the sea of dollars out there as a consequence of the trade deficits, is also driving down the value of the dollar. And the Bush administration, in fact, is encouraging this. This started about a year and a half ago where they were, quote, talking down the dollar. Remember this? And the dollar has dropped about 20-25% compared to most currencies in the world. The Japanese have been buying dollars frantically, trying to stabilize the yen relative to the dollar, their central bank. They bought $100 billion this year just to suck it out of the pool of dollars. But in Europe, they're not doing that. And so we see the euro is going up, the pound is going up. And what this means, essentially, is that if Saudi Arabia wants to buy something with the dollars, with the U.S. dollars that they are getting as a result of our, you know, buying all that oil from them and not selling them anything that they can buy from us, that, you know, ultimately the Bush administration's plan is to drive down the value of the dollar so that the cost of imports will be more expensive. And the point I was making with the Saudis just a moment ago, that if they want to buy something other than anything made in the United States, say they want to buy something from Germany or from France or from Russia, they're paying for it now. If they're paying for it in dollars, those dollars are worth less. And the oil, of course, is denominated in dollars. So the dollars are worth less. Not worthless, but worth less. And so what do? In order to maintain their purchasing power, they have to raise the price of oil. And that's what OPEC basically today said that they were going to do. They were going to cut production, which will raise the price of oil. Because they're ending up with the same amount of purchasing power. Gold was at $412, I believe, yesterday. This is an indication. I mean, when I started this program a year ago, gold was at $290. It doesn't mean that gold has gone up in value. It means that the value of the dollar has gone down. And the Bush administration has been trying to use this monetary policy, this playing with money, as a substitute for a rational trade policy, and it isn't working. And what it's doing is driving up oil prices. So you have oil prices going up. You have oil corporations acting as monopolies and making record profits, charging whatever they want for gas. And everybody wonders, you know, why is the price of gas going up? This is not rocket science. This is conservative economics. It's very straightforward. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Well, thank you, Tom. To change subject just a bit, Condoleezza the Hutz, we finally going to testify. We forced her in public under oath. I only wish that you or I were going to be the ones that were going to ask her the questions, because I have a feeling that she's going to be softballed. I really do.
I think these guys, using the term generically, the people on the commission are really stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because
yes.
because if they give her the tough questions, which are absolutely legitimate, everybody's going to scream that they're being partisan. And if they softball her, then the Democrats are going to scream that they're. I mean, there's no way that they can win. That I can figure. They have to. They're going to have to walk an incredible tightrope.
No, the only person I think that has credibility on the subject is probably Bob Kerry, who has been hard on everybody, which is you know a good thing for him.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Watching Bob Kerry do his I'm a skeptic routine, and the Clinton administration dropped the ball on this routine right after Madeleine Albright had just laid out everything that they did, and remembering that time and how aggressively the Republicans went after Bill Clinton by the throat. And I'm not a big Bill Clinton fan. Let me put that on the table. You know, I think he was a reasonably decent president, but you know, boy, did he screw up a lot of things. You know, trade and telecommunications act and whatnot. But he did, to his credit, throw 60 cruise missiles at Osama bin Laden and raise that to the top of the priorities and have daily meetings about this and try to get something done relative to this. And it's just amazing to hear these right wingers go on these TV talk shows now and say, well, Bill Clinton didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And nobody challenges them. I have yet to hear a news reporter go, that's a lie.
Well, you know, the liberal media is falling down, I guess. Speaking of liberal media, I understand you have nothing to do with it, but I wanted to bring up the brand new liberal talk show network, which is I guess premiering today. I know you're on Jones Satellite, and that's fine. But as someone who has had a liberal talk show before, I'm frankly kind of trepidatious about this whole thing because it's so far out in the open, and there's so much money behind it. If it fails, and it fails in a big way, it's simply going to bolster, you know, the Rush Limbaugh and all the bobblehead dolls that follow after him, their contention that liberal talk radio doesn't work because, you know, it's boring and it's depressing. And quite frankly, from my point of view, I don't know that you can do it this way. You know, I had a problem with, like, Ralph Nader trying to build a political party when he was with the Greens from the top down. I think trying to build a radio network, just present it whole in place and hope that you get the audience to flock to you without any history, I think that's dangerous. I think it's troubling.
Well, that's another tight wire act. And I have to say, Chris, and thank you for your calls and your comments. I absolutely hope, I agree with you, I absolutely hope that Al Franken and all those guys and Randy Rhodes and whatnot are incredibly successful. I hope that they just kick out the doors in the ratings numbers. And I suspect that, you know, I suspect that they could even screw up and do it because there is so much pent-up demand right now in the United States for liberal talk radio or whatever you want to call this. And as we are demonstrating in all the markets that we are in with this program. And so, you know, I wish them the best. Anyhow, let me get back to economics here. And thank you, Chris, for the call. I appreciate your calling. One last thing. Clear Channel Communications, this is the Wall Street Journal today, since we're talking about talk radio. Clear Channel Communications, Inc., the radio company that frequently comes under fire for its large donations to Republican politicians and allegedly conservative bent in programming, is taking a high-profile step in the other direction. The company has signed up former Democratic presidential candidate, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, as a host for a Sunday morning talk show based in Chicago, which is the nation's third-largest radio market after New York and Los Angeles. It will also run. Jesse Jackson's show on Clear Channel is also going to run in New York, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Detroit, and Norfolk, Virginia. In addition, Clear Channel is putting this new liberal radio network, Air America, on the air in the Portland, Oregon market. So, you know, I'm telling you, something's happening here. This is our time. It's the pendulum is swinging back. The American people are waking up and they're saying, you know, it sounded kind of nice. It sounded great back when Ronald Reagan started talking about it. You know, just let the market decide. Just let the corporations. They're more efficient. They know how to do things. I remember going to the Department of Motor Vehicles. I didn't like standing in line. I don't like those bureaucrats, those people who have good, secure jobs and belong to unions. How dare they? People kind of went along with the righteous indignation of the cons, not realizing that the real con agenda is protecting inherited wealth and very large corporations. And at the expense of the commons, which includes the environment, our water, our air, our infrastructure, our public education system, our health care system, our retirement system, at the expense of the commons and at the expense of the average working person. That the conservative agenda is simply going back to the old feudalism. It's the old style religion. It's the old style feudalism, where which is a very, frankly, it's a very stable form of government. Feudalism ruled Europe in the last millennium, at least half of it, about half of the last 1,000 years. Feudalism ruled Europe. Feudalism ruled the Middle East for much longer than that. Feudalism is rule by the rich. Yes, you had kings, but the kings really didn't have that much power. In, 1245, I forget what year the Magna Carta was signed. I think it was, if I'm not sure, I shouldn't say it. 1215, 1245, whatever it was, King John was forced to sign the Magna Carta. And people say, it was the beginning of human rights. No, that was the apex of feudalism. Because the rights that King John had to sign, to agree to, were not for the people. The serfs were still considered property. They were just machines to be run for the benefit of the feudal lords. But it was the feudal lords, the rich across the United Kingdom, who said to the king, "You must do our bidding." And guess what, folks? It's back. Only the feudal lords are not called feudal lords anymore, and they're not individuals anymore. They, by and large, although there is a few out there, but by and large, they take the corporate form. We are here as a nation of, by, and for the corporation. As Ralph Nader says, George Bush is in office, a corporation disguised as a human being. So, Conservative Economics 101, the Tom Hartman radio program. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by restoring democracy. How about that to the United States of America? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Nitrates from the Midwest are a major nuisance in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every spring, a vast expanse of the Gulf of Mexico loses so much oxygen that people describe it as a dead zone where fish cannot survive. The problem begins when nutrients come down the Mississippi River and feed huge blooms of algae. Some experts say the dead zone would cover less of the Gulf if healthy wetlands covered more of the upper Midwest. The nutrients that cause the problem are nitrates that are used as fertilizer on farm fields. When too much fertilizer is used, the nitrates get into groundwater. From there, they seep into tributaries of the Mississippi, and then they're on their way to the Gulf. Jean Barr is a hydrogeology professor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and she's an expert on contaminants in groundwater. She says nitrates travel easily in groundwater, and that's one of several reasons why they're a problem.
First of all, we're adding nitrogen to the landscape, and so there's a huge excess overall because nitrate is so soluble in water. And we are farming right up to the edges of streams, which means that the distance that the groundwater moves through the subsurface before it gets to the stream is fairly short.
Microbes in waterlogged soil near these farm fields will chew up nitrates and break them down into harmless nitrogen gas. But a lot of wetlands in the upper Midwest have been drained and turned into farm fields. Barr says that's short-circuited the natural processes that break down the nitrates in groundwater. Experts say restoration of wetlands in the upper Midwest is an essential part of reducing the impact of nitrates on the Gulf of Mexico. That problem is widely regarded as a national issue because it affects one of the most important fisheries in U.S. waters. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I was one of you who stood up for you. So you
sticking up for you. Who's is it Bill O'Reilly's book, Who's Looking Out for You? Yeah, right. Corporate America, they're looking out for you. Yeah. Jon Snow, he's looking out for you. Treasury Secretary Jon Snow reignited, says the Associated Press. Martin Krutzinger wrote this article. Reignited the political argument over U.S. companies shipping jobs overseas yesterday with comments that outsourcing was an integral part of a global trading system. Snow's comments on in economically hard-hit Ohio. Here he is in Ohio. This is a battleground state. It's like, at some point, this is what causes me to say that that conservative economics is a cult, and these people have all bought into a religion, because if it wasn't and if they hadn't, they would not make these blunders. I don't know how else to say it. To go into a state that has been wiped out by outsourcing and say, outsourcing is a good thing, it's a normal part of the market, when it never has been. It never has been. We're outsourcing to India, and India will not allow outsourcing in India to go. They won't allow their jobs to go outside of India. India has trade barriers in place. India is protectionist. India is doing very well right now. 1-866-889-8894. Brad in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Brad, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I love your show. Thanks so much for what you're doing. I had two questions for you. One was about Ralph Nader.
We've only got about 40 seconds here, Brad. So,
Is there any chance Bush could have bought out Nader to run again?
Well, you know, no, I don't think so. I think ultimately Ralph Nader's probably going to end up doing a strategic campaign. I certainly hope so, where he says to people in the battleground states, don't vote for me.
I hope so. The other question, what's your opinion of Michael Rupert and his site From the Wilderness?
Yeah, I've known of that, and I've read it occasionally over the last year or two. I think every now and then Mike Rupert gets something that's really hot. He does a good job with what he does. Sometimes his sources aren't deep enough or well tracked enough that I feel comfortable using his material on the air. But it's a fascinating site to read. So, Brad, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our website, TomHartman.com. You can drop into our chat room there if you'd like. You can also go to the message board. You'll find some 20, 30,000 messages. It's a great time. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush reversed course under heavy pressure on Tuesday and agreed to let his national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, give sworn testimony before the September 11th commission. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney also agreed to meet together privately with the full panel, abandoning their earlier insistence that they would meet only with the commission's chairman and vice chairman. Rice was likely to testify toward the end of next week, with Bush and Cheney following sometime after that, a senior administration official said. In one of the bloodiest days and weeks for the U.S. military, five troops died when a bomb exploded under their military vehicle west of Baghdad on Wednesday. At least four foreign nationals, including one American, were killed in a separate attack, and some of the bodies were burned, beaten, and hanged from a bridge. A military spokesman declined to say what nationality the soldiers were, but the vast majority of troops operating in the Al-Anbar province west of Baghdad are U.S. Marines. Treasury Secretary John Snow reignited the political argument over U.S. companies shipping jobs overseas Tuesday with comments that outsourcing was an integral part of a global trading system. Snow's comments in economically hard-hit Ohio were published as George W. Bush was delivering a speech defending his free trade policies in Wisconsin, a state that has lost 80,000 manufacturing jobs. Asked in a newspaper interview whether he thought outsourcing of jobs to other countries made the country strong, Snow replied, "It's one aspect of trade, and there can't be any doubt about the fact that trade makes America strong." In a high-octane election year fight, Democrat John Kerry on Tuesday sought to lay the blame for soaring gas prices on a resistant Republican administration, while George W. Bush warned of higher gas taxes from some in the other party in Washington. The presumptive Democratic nominee complained that Bush has not taken steps to drive prices down, calling on the administration to stop pumping oil into the nation's emergency stockpile until Americans see cheaper prices. The administration has rejected that notion. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Treasury Secretary John Snow was set to say on Friday that frivolous lawsuits had caused the U.S. ladder industry to fold before a Small Business Administration conference. Snow planned to say there is not a single company left in the United States that makes ladders. The lawsuits got to be too much for the ladder industry. But when the department discovered there were some 11 producers selling $850 million worth of ladders in the United States, the speech was changed. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have been to the cross, and I have felt the passion. Not Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, where viewers get to see a Jesus character beaten to a bloody pulp and then graphically crucified on a cross. No, there's nothing at all holy or redeeming about the cross I have witnessed. It's a political cross. marking the spot in Austin, Texas, where the GOP's diabolical hatchet man, Tom DeLay, beat our state's representative democracy to a pulp. This simple wooden cross, nailed to a telephone pole, is 4 feet high, painted white, and hand-lettered. The crosspiece says, Democracy. The centerpiece says, R.I.P., killed by Tom DeLay on this spot. Tom, of course, is the nutball Republican majority leader of the U.S. House, who stormed into the Texas state capitol last year and used the GOP's total control of state government to ram through a grossly partisan, contorted piece of raw gerrymandering that autocratically redraws our state's congressional districts and steals half a dozen seats from the Democrats. A theft that will alter the balance of power in Washington. Austin has long had its own coherent congressional district, logical for a state capital and a community of shared interests. DeLay's power grab, however, fractures our city into three shards of incoherent districts that are dominated by populations far from our borders. Stand in central Austin at 38th and Ronson Streets, where the telephone pole cross was erected, and you are at the epicenter of the fracture. Step in one direction and you're in a district controlled by San Antonio's Republican suburbs. Step in another direction and you're in a district running 300 miles away to the Rio Grande Valley. Step again and you're in a district controlled by Houston's Republican suburbs. This is Jim Hightower saying, a majority of Austinites now have congressional districts without representation. There once was a revolution over that anti-democratic principle.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Jon Snow reignites the fight over job outsourcing. This is just remarkable. It's absolutely wacky. Anyway, I've been ranting about that for a little too long here in the last half hour. Move along. A reporter apologizes for Iraq coverage. Did you see this? This is fascinating. In the wake of the Editor and Publisher magazine, which is a magazine for editors and publishers, as you might guess, points out that now, you know, that nobody in the administration has apologized for 9/11 until Richard Clark came along and did it. Dick Clark came along and he said, I'm sorry, and I ask your forgiveness. And, you know, George Bush has never said that. Condi Rice, none of these guys, nobody has said, hey, it happened on our watch, we blew it. And so anyhow, Dick Clark came along and said that, and now the question is, what about the press that was complicit in this, this phony war on Iraq, for example, making up weapons so that we could go in and grab 10% of the world's oil, make a fortune, hundreds of billions of dollars for the oil industry buddies of Bush and Cheney? Well, here's this article by the E&P staff, editor and publisher. While the major media, from the New York Times on down, has largely remained silent about their own failings in this area. This area being, well, quote, related to the release of false information on the Iraq threat before and after the war, end quote. A young columnist for a small paper in Fredericksburg, Virginia, has stepped forward. Rick Mercer, who writes a column published in the Freelance Star newspaper in Fredericksburg, Virginia, writes, "The media are finished with their big blowouts on the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, and there is one thing they forgot to say. We're sorry. Sorry we let unsubstantiated claims drive our coverage. Sorry we were dismissive of experts who disputed White House charges against Iraq. Sorry we let a band of self-serving Iraqi defectors make fools of us." And I might add, you know, Ahmed Chalabi, the convicted bank swindler who can't step foot in Jordan because they'll throw him in jail over his crimes, his bank swindling crimes, is still being paid $250,000 a month by this administration for, quote, intelligence services in Iraq. And interestingly, the second largest army in Iraq, one of our callers alerted me to this a couple of weeks ago, and I tracked it down. The second largest army in Iraq is a private army. It has over 15,000 soldiers. Its job is to guard Iraq's oil infrastructure. The pipelines, the oil wells, the refineries, the ports, over 15,000 soldiers. It's a private army. A very profitable private army, because the cost of it is paid for by you and me with our tax dollars. And who owns this private army, the second largest army in the country of Iraq? Ahmed Chalabi. What a surprise. Anyhow, Rick Mercer, as he's saying, he said, "Sorry we let unsubstantiated claims drive our coverage. Sorry we were dismissive of experts who disputed White House charges against Iraq. Sorry we let a band of self-serving Iraqi defectors make fools of us. Sorry we fell for Colin Powell's performance at the United Nations. Sorry we couldn't bring ourselves to hold the administration's feet to the fire when it really mattered. Maybe we'll do a better job next war. Maybe we'll do a better job next war." Concluding his column, Mercer declared, "There's no excusing that failure. The only thing that can be said is, sorry." Remarkable. Well said, actually. And, you know, it's. I think people are starting to get it. I think there's this slow, but, you know, it's moving along, kind of waking up that's happening with regard to Iraq. I mean, before we invaded Iraq, the so-called peace movement, which was made up of people from the military, I mean, you had generals. This was not a pacifist movement. The Do Not Invade Iraq movement that brought out the largest demonstrations in the history of the planet. Not just, you know, some, you know, big deal, but the largest in the history of the planet. This anti-war thing, it wasn't just, you know, let's be pacifists, let's be nice, you know, let's not pick on it. It was people saying, if we go in as the president of Egypt, who is not any kind of a pacifist, the guy's a dictator. Mubarak, the president of Egypt. Yeah, Egypt is a wonderful and remarkable country. I was in Egypt the week that Anwar Sadat was shot. And I'll tell you, it was wild. I mean, every street corner, none of the lights worked. Every street corner had sandbags with guys with machine guns. It was incredible. And we saw that, you know, that transition. Louise and I were there for a week, just by coincidence. The week that, anyway, it's the president of Egypt, Mubarak, before we invaded Iraq, said, and he allowed himself to be quoted in the international press, he said, if the United States invades Iraq, you will create a 100, or did he say 1,000? I think he said 100. You will create 100 bin Ladens. 100 bin Ladens. Because the Muslim world will feel under siege. Because the case has not been made in the court of public opinion that Iraq actually represents a danger worthy of taking them out. I mean, what Mubarak was saying essentially was, hey, if you can't convince Germany, your ally, that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, if you can't convince France, who funded your revolution, loaned you the money to fight the war against England, if you can't convince them that there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, then I can tell you for sure you have not convinced the Muslim world that this guy represents a threat to anybody other than perhaps his own people. And we were not making the argument. Now, it may well have been a legitimate argument to make, but we were not making the argument that we were invading Iraq to liberate the Iraqi people from Saddam Hussein. That argument was never made before the war. No. Because if we had tried to make that argument, then the immediate response from people around the world would have been, okay, Saddam, you know, yeah, there were a couple of burps there. I mean, you know, the war with Iran, when a bunch of his people died and he gassed the Kurds, or the Kurds got caught in the crossfire, whatever. And, you know, when George Herbert Walker Bush, after the first Gulf War, told the Shiites in the South to rise up, that he'd go to their defense, and then he failed to, and they rose up anyway, and we just stepped back, and Saddam went in and slaughtered 300,000 people. I mean, yes, there was that, but the world would say, but, you know, he's really, at the moment, he's just a tin pot dictator. You know, he's got a few thousand people in. But yes, he's got the rape rooms and he's got the torture. So does Saudi Arabia. So does Egypt. If you want to go after, if you really want to liberate a people from a government that has killed millions of their citizens and is continuing to hold them in oppression, liberate China. Liberate Burma. Liberate Zimbabwe. There's some, I mean, Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, 2 million of his own citizens have died in the last 5, 6, 7 years as a direct result of his genocidal policies. And the world would have said, you want to start, if the United States has decided that it's in the business of liberating nations from bad guys, we've got a list. And Saddam would not be at the top of that list. So anyhow, the USA, where I started with all this, USA Today just published a really interesting article. You know, considering USA to be, you know, Al Newhart and all, conservative publication. Real interesting article. It says to me that folks are starting to wake up. We'll get to that in just a second. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Kurt in Salt Lake City's on the line. Hey, Kurt, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I'm with you on most, well, I'll just say everything you're saying, but the question, it spins off to many questions, but one of them being is, if this is the case, why is Bush's approval rating so high? Why isn't he tarred and feathered, run on a rail or indicted or in behind bars or something by now?
Well, I think there's three reasons. One is that both houses of Congress, the House and the Senate, are controlled by Republicans. So it has been made impossible for there to be something like the Watergate hearings, which required a Democratic Congress, or like the Bill Clinton Monica Gate, or whatever you want to call it, hearings, which required a Republican Congress. In other words, if the opposition party controls one of the two houses of Congress, which is really the healthiest thing, I think, for democracy, then, or at least for American democracy as it's configured right now, then you have the opportunity for the opposition to actually step up and say, let's look into some of this stuff. But right now, if the Democrats try to say, well, let's investigate, you know, Halliburton, or let's investigate the failure of intelligence, or let's investigate Valerie Plame being outed, or, you know, I mean, give me a, you know, there's a long list of scandals. If they say, well, let's investigate it, Tom DeLay, well, actually Denny Hastert in the House of Representatives, and Bill Frist in the Senate simply say, no, ain't going to happen. And that's end of discussion. So number one, there's no, you know, bully pulpit, no forum from which news can be generated that would lead to those kind of inquiries. Secondly, the press has been very timid. Up until very recently, by and large, the mainstream press has just been letting George get away with it. And I think that they've been rationalizing that by saying this is a critical time in our country. It's a crisis, and we need to go along, you know, with the institutions of government. And what's happening is Bush is abusing those institutions. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to agree with you. I just wish the press would step up to the plate better. A related question to then is, considering that I believe it's true that the overseas, the people are more educated, more aware of what's going on than we are, what is the carrot or the stick that's getting the so-called coalition forces to be in Iraq?
Oh, we're giving them enormous amounts of money. Yeah, it's just the bottom line there. Kurt, I got a boogie on. Thanks for the call. They call it the coalition of the billing. I mean, we cut deals with all of these countries, but most of them, you know, these newly emergent European countries that were broke, and they still are, where we're giving them huge amounts of foreign aid, and guess what? They're going into Iraq. We're paying Turkey something like $1 million a soldier.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single
single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run into my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the pill that will help you escape the Matrix. We're back live coast to coast, border to border on Sirius Radio System, the Sirius Radio or Satellite Radio System, on terrestrial radio stations, literally from coast to coast, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And both WhiteRoseSociety.org and RadioPower.org are supported by their listeners, by our listeners. So if you happen to be listening to this program on one of those two vehicles over the Internet, let me encourage you to go to the donate button at RadioPower.org or WhiteRoseSociety.org and make a commitment. Make a commitment. It is entirely reasonable to pay for what you get, you know, no problem with that. I think it's a very fair thing. I don't want to sound like NPR here, but anyway, moving along, 26 minutes past the hour. Here we got this story in the USA Today. In 2002, troops from the 5th Special Forces Group, who specialize in the Middle East, were pulled out of the hunt of Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan to prepare for their next assignment. Guess where? This was 2002. We were in Afghanistan. The Special Forces Group, who specialize in the Middle East. These are the guys who, like, speak Arabic, who know the geography of the Middle East. Their job was to find Osama bin Laden. They got pulled out of Afghanistan to go to Iraq. Their replacements, USA Today says, were troops with expertise in Spanish cultures. We took the troops, the special forces troops, the elite squads, we took the special forces troops that we had trained to be ready to go into Colombia and fight the drug wars, whatever those things are, or into Mexico if there was a revolution. We took them and put them in Afghanistan because the Middle Eastern special forces troops we needed to pull out and send to Iraq. And USA Today is talking about this. Is this thing coming unraveled? Seems like it to me. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Doug in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Doug, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make a point. France, Russia, and the other countries that opposed us in the Iraq conflict had economic interests, just like we, the United States, had economic interests in Iraq, and all these wars, all these fights, everything that we keep going through are strictly based on the dollar sign.
Well, I don't think it's strictly based, but your point is well taken, Doug. I mean, Lukoil, or however it's pronounced, the big Russian oil company, had just recently, I mean, like in 99, I think, or 2000, signed contracts for about half of Iraq's oil to go to Russia. And, yeah. Russia had an interest. FINA, the French company, had contracts to buy. The Germans had contracts. But I think the Russians had a big economic interest in Iraq. I'd say that the French and German economic interests in Iraq were, in the grand scheme of things, pretty irrelevant, frankly.
Well, my point of saying that is that humanity has pretty much gone out the window. Our governments, the world governments all around, aren't really doing anything to help the people in their own nations out. They're just wanting to fatten each other's pockets.
It's the almighty dollar.
Possible. Yeah, and it's becoming the decimation of the human civilization. It really saddens me.
Yeah, it saddens me too, Doug, and that's why I'm doing this radio program, because I think it's possible to change it.
Thank you for it.
Yeah, you're welcome. We have had crises of conscience in the past in this nation. And we have awakened and turned back, as we did in the 30s with Franklin Roosevelt. I think it's time to do it again. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin with you. Stick around. We'll be right back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Nearly 30,000 workers at Safeway and Giant grocery stores in the Baltimore and Washington, D.C. areas will not go on strike. Union employees at the chains overwhelmingly ratified a new contract yesterday, just hours before their old one expired. The deal includes a raise, but that's offset by a requirement to pay nearly twice as much for health insurance. And, similar to the contract in Southern California, this deal creates a lower tier of pay and benefits for new hires.
More news from the worldwide Student and Labor Stop Killer Coke campaign. Since March 15th, dozens of union workers have been participating in hunger strikes outside bottling plants in six Colombian cities. They're protesting Coca-Cola's alleged policy of layoffs, intimidation, and collaboration with Colombian paramilitary groups. The company has pressured more than 500 workers into resigning in exchange for a lump sum payment. Most union leaders have refused to resign or take the money.
10 descendants of slaves brought to America in the 18th and 19th centuries are suing Lloyd's of London, the company that insured the slave ships. The lawsuit claims Lloyd's helped enable the African-American slave trade by covering the ships used to transport them. It's not the first time the insurer's been sued for slavery reparations, but in this case, at least one of the plaintiffs has DNA evidence proving his slave ancestry, as well as copies of a manifest linking his ancestorship to Lloyd's of London. The lead attorney is also a reparations expert. He negotiated a $2 billion settlement with Swiss companies that profited from Nazi slave labor during World War II and is also involved in a case seeking compensation for victims of apartheid in South Africa.
Xerox is facing a lawsuit over color. A federal judge has granted class action status to all black Xerox sales representatives between 1997 and the present who feel they've been affected by an alleged pattern of racial discrimination in assignment of sales territories, promotions, and compensation. As many as 1,000 workers may join the initial six plaintiffs, one of which says he was told by a Xerox general manager he was assigned to the Bronx because, quote, blacks in the Bronx go hand in hand. Xerox denies all charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Between December and today, an estimated 1.1 million unemployed Americans exhausted their jobless benefits, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Now an average of about 80,000 per week are running out of unemployment benefits. Among those still receiving compensation, more than a third already live below the poverty line, and 40% have no health insurance. Half of those in this predicament lived above the poverty line and had health coverage before they lost their jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
are listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And only what's true. And welcome back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. USA Today pointing out that the 5th Special Forces Group, the group that specializes in the Middle East, was in Afghanistan. They were looking for Osama bin Laden. They were taking apart Al-Qaeda. And the Bush administration comes along and says, against all advice, hey, guys, it's time to leave. You got to go to Iraq, and we're going to replace you with a special forces group who speaks Spanish. The CIA, meanwhile, this is the actual USA Today story by Dave Moniz and Steve Camarao. Shift from bin Laden hunt evoke questions. The CIA, meanwhile, was stretched badly in its capacity to collect, translate, and analyze information coming from Afghanistan. When the White House raised a new priority, it took specialists away from the Afghanistan effort to ensure Iraq was covered. And it goes on from there. It gets actually very interesting. I'll share a little more with you in a moment. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. And Jim in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a remark about something you said a couple commercials ago, commercial breaks ago, about $1 million for a Turkish soldier. And I'd like to tell you that you know, Turkey wasn't one of the new emerging poor people or whatever in Europe. They've been in the front lines of the Cold War since the 50s, risking Turkish citizens' lives for American citizens' safety over here.
I agree.
And sent one of the biggest contingencies of forces to Korea. And there's a senator, which I can't recall the name, but during the Korean War time, said we should get more Turkish soldiers because they cost the American taxpayer 35 cents each. So these are kind of, terrible things to say, and all we do when we say these things, we serve the Turkophobes like the Greeks and the Armenians. I hope you're not serving their false agenda in this country, but I kind of got hurt when I heard that.
Well, I'm sorry, Jim. I did not mean that as a slur on Turkey in any way. It was actually about $100,000 per soldier. The Bush administration pushed through this incredible foreign aid package for Turkey, and it was clearly a quid pro quo. You provide soldiers, we'll give you this money. And it worked out to about $100,000 a soldier.
Yes, but there are no Turkish soldiers under U.S. forces in Iraq. That didn't go through. Turkey didn't send any forces out there.
Ultimately,
don't know where that's coming from, but there is quite a bit of activity by Americans in Turkey, even though the media leaves this impression that Turkey is not allowing Americans to go through Turkey. All of the flights that are coming on to northern Iraq or all of Iraq come out of Incirlik Air Force Base, and these activities have always gone on. And, I don't know why rent sometimes or risking of certain countries' citizens is translated into this bogus thing called foreign aid. I don't know. But, you got to pay something somewhere for using. I mean, Turkey is being used as the 51st state of United States right now on this war against Iraq.
Well, and I think you're making my point. And that is that the states, many of the states that are participating are not participating because they think that it's the right thing to do. They're participating because, in part, because we're paying them to. And, I think that it's a legitimate, if the American people were to collectively decide, if we had a debate in this country about should we pay other countries to participate with us in a war that is our choice, that we're choosing to do, not a war that we have to do because a country attacked us, then the American people said, yeah, okay, we're willing to do that, and Congress voted for it, then I'd say, yeah, but that's not what happened. That's not what happened. But, I'm absolutely in no way was I trying to put down Turkey. What I was saying is they were in the same situation as these countries, the emerging countries, Poland, for example, Romania, the emerging countries in Eastern Europe. That is, they aren't the wealthier countries like France and Germany who can afford to say, no, we're not going to give you any soldiers even if you offer us money. And, and I think it's exploitation, frankly, of Turkey on the part of this administration.
Well, I just would like for you to know that Turkey always stood there next to the United States.
Absolutely.
Just about everything without question.
Absolutely. In fact, the Cuban Missile Crisis, in part, was provoked by the fact that Turkey allowed the United States to base nuclear weapons there, and it's right on the border of Russia, and Russia freaked out, and the Soviet Union freaked out and said, hey, wait a minute, you're going to have nukes on our border. We're going to put them in Cuba on your border. And they tried to get us to take them out of Turkey, and we never did, and the Turks went along with us. Turkey has been a long-time ally of the United States. I absolutely acknowledge that.
Yes, and if you look at some of the heroic actions that the Turkish military took, saving American lives in Korea, that would be a very touching story for a lot of Americans to hear about what a country did for the United States. But otherwise, I think you're doing a great job, and I've been listening to you, and I'm kind of hooked on your show. But I just kind of really hurt my feelings when I heard that.
Well, I'm sorry, Jim. I sometimes you throw these lines out, and I was coming up against a bumper, there was no context. I hope I've clarified for you.
No problem. Thank you,
okay.
Sir.
I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to call in. All of these countries. It's a poor reflection on George Bush and what he's been doing, frankly. It's not. I didn't mean to put down any of the nations that are the coalition of the billing, as it's called. This is just how it is. So here, back to USA Today, this story. Even before the invasion, I'm quoting again from this story by Dave Moniz and Steve Camero, USA Today. This was on the 29th, a couple days ago. Even before the invasion, the wisdom of shifting resources from the bin Laden hunt to the war in Iraq, the wisdom was raised privately by top military officials and publicly by Senator Bob Graham of Florida and others. Now, I frankly find it pretty impressive. I guess my standards are low. having seen the media do this, roll over and scratch our tummy thing that the media has done for the Bush administration for the last year, or for the last three years. I mean, ever since, George Bush comes into office, and you will recall, before he was selected by the Supreme Court, the media would play his sound bites with all of his intact, and he really can't put together a good sentence on the fly. Bill Clinton was brilliant at it. George Bush is not. It doesn't. Now, let me say also, that doesn't mean that I think that George Bush is stupid. I want to be on the record. I think that makes him, the fact that he has a particular and unique form of intelligence that may not be tied to his ability to be eloquent, but is certainly tied to his ability to be able to get people to be loyal to him and to do things for him, even if it's the wrong thing, even if it's against the interest of themselves or their nation, I think makes him more dangerous to democracy and to the United States, frankly. I think that those people who lampoon and cartoonize George W. Bush make on those on the left say, well, he's just a dumb guy, No, he's not a dumb guy. He may not be academically real smart, and he may not be the most literate person in the world, and he may not be very articulate, but he's not a dumb guy. If we catch him, bin Laden, this summer, which I expect, it's 2 years too late. This is what Richard Clark said on Sunday's NBC's Meet the Press, and they quote Clark as saying this in USA Today. See, my point was where I started with that thing is that the right after the election, all of a sudden you stopped seeing sound clips of George Bush going They started editing. They started cleaning them up, and for 2 years, every time he was on TV, he was very articulate because the news organizations were actually cleaning up his speeches. Have you noticed how in the last few weeks? Maybe the last few months. I never noticed a point of demarcation where it just kind of began. I think it's a picking up trend that increasingly the news media is now playing George Bush unvarnished again. It wasn't happening for a long time. So anyhow, I see this debate coming out into the mainstream press, and it makes me wonder. If this administration, there we go. I see I had to do it in honor of George Bush. If this administration is reaching the end of some kind of rope with regard to the willingness of the media to play along and just basically be handmaidens to, you know, the Bush administration says jump and they say how high. It's like the news story about right after the 2000 election, the 2001 installation, right after Bush was inaugurated, CNN sent one of their vice presidents up to the White House to assure him, to assure the administration that they would start treating him nicely in their news reports. Now, that's not the language that they used, but that it was pretty clear that that's what it was about. And they started. They were. You know, hey, if it's this administration plays the access game. If you want to talk to the president, if you want to be in the room, if you want to be in on important things, if you want to have things leaked to you, be nice to us because you're either with us or you're against us. And there's no middle ground. And the middle ground, see, the middle ground used to be called impartial journalism. Doesn't exist anymore, at least with regard to the Bush administration. If you're a reporter, you are with them or you're against them, period. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Scott in New York's on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I just want to throw a thought out there, play a devil's advocate, but if they caught Osama bin Laden tomorrow, next day, next week, next month, do you think the Democrats would have any chance of beating Bush in November, or do you think that would just blow the whole thing?
You know, I frankly don't think that that's going to be that big a deal. You know, everybody thought that if they caught Saddam Hussein, it would be a big deal. And you know, the day after they caught Saddam Hussein, I mean, there was 24 hours of the Bush administration just kind of, you know, rolling in it, you know, reveling in it. And then the next day, a couple of Americans got killed in Baghdad, and poof, we were right back where we were. And I think if they catch bin Laden, you know, bin Laden is no longer directing the terror network. I mean, he may be directing some little piece of Al-Qaeda, but what's happened is that our invasion of Iraq has so polarized the Muslim world. It has made them so angry with us, even in the countries that are our allies, like Jordan, where 90% of the people polled by, you know, reliable, impartial, you know, the Pew survey, go in there and they 90% of the people are, you know, think ill of the United States right now, think poorly of Americans as a consequence of George Bush. We have sunk to a level of standing in the world that is unprecedented because of the behavior of this president. So I think that as a consequence of that, he catches bin Laden and some terrible thing is still going to happen somewhere in the world, in Iraq, if nowhere else. And everybody's going to say, well, that didn't do any good. I think, you know, unless he catches him literally the day before, is it November 2nd or November 5th this year that we vote, whichever date it is, if he catches him the day before we vote, then it might influence the election. But I think if it's more than a week out, it's not going to make any difference. What do you think, Scott?
I don't know. I think it would kind of take the, you know, I'm definitely behind Kerry now all the way, but I'm just scared that it's going to take the wind out of the sails with this whole thing with Condoleezza Rice, and it's kind of—I feel like we're banking on him messing up so much. And if he does get bin Laden, then he's going to say, "Well, we got Saddam and we got bin Laden, and you guys just couldn't handle that. We got Saddam first. You know, it's going to come down to we knew what we were doing all the time, but you should have had faith. We just happened to get Saddam before we got bin Laden. And I just think that the Democrats should just be prepared, you know, something to work over in their minds how are we going to handle it if it happens.
Yeah, I mean, you raised really, Scott, the largest issue, which is that as long as the Democratic Party, yeah, or anybody for that matter, I mean, you know, this show, any commentator, whatever, as long as the Democratic Party pins their success on the failure of somebody else, they're doomed. You know, the Democrats have to have a clear vision, and the Greens and the progressives and, you know, right across the board, anybody who opposes this administration, it's not enough to just say, hey, I'm against this guy. You got to say, this is what I'm for. And the Democrats have to be laying that out. And you know, to his credit, I think, over the last two or three days, John Kerry has put forward some very positive, you know, this is what I'm for kind of things. And that's the kind of thing that John Edwards was really good at during that, you know, the primary campaign. And I think that, you know, when the right-wing commentators, Limbaugh in particular is very good at it, says, you know, well, you know, the Democrats are all about hoping that the president will fail. Well, yeah, there is an element of truth in that, and that's always the case in partisan politics. I mean, when Clinton was president, president, the Republicans were all hoping the president would fail. So that's, you know, that's just a normal and real thing in partisan politics. And you have to go beyond that. You have to have a bigger vision.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay,
great.
Scott, thanks
for
the call.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. And thanks for making a great point, because it's a great stepping off point, because there is, you know, such a clear vision out there that has been held by liberals since George Washington said that I hope that America will ever see an increase in liberality in the United States. There is a clear vision. It's a clear vision of a nation that cares about its people. It's a clear vision of a nation where people can actually work and support themselves. That a day's work will generate a living wage where people can pay for their children's education, they can pay for their health care, or if the health care system has been hijacked by a bunch of right-wing loonies and corporations and out-of-control monopolistic corporations, then the government will pay for it. See, this is... now we're getting to the problem. The problem is at the level of the systems, not just... But in any case, there is this clear vision of, yes, we need to provide for the essentials of democracy. Jefferson was so clear. You can't have a democracy if you don't have an educated populace. We should have free public schools and well-funded public schools. We are cutting money from funding for our public schools. Every year, the Bush administration has cut funding from our public schools. And you know, because they've got this agenda of privatization and religious schools, and it's destroying America. We need a reasonable healthcare system. We need a rational trade policy. We need rational labor policy. If corporations can organize, labor should be able to too. I mean, just there is a liberal vision out there. We just need to say it. I guess I just did. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
That grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula,
formula. You'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The oceans are massive and seemingly unmanageable, but an author argues for a piecemeal approach. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The world beneath the ocean is a lot like the land above it, and seeing it that way can help us figure out how to conserve marine life, according to author Rod Fujita.
While the ocean appears to be vast and imperturbable, it's really made up of habitats and living communities, just like the land is. So the same rationale applies to the ocean as does to the land. There are special places. There are vulnerable species in the ocean just as there are on land. So the same kind of conservation ethic should guide our actions in the ocean.
Fujita has written a new book called Heal the Ocean, Solutions for Saving Our Seas. He says while the ocean is an enormous shared resource, we can help it by focusing on its parts. For example, coral reefs. Many of these habitats are suffering from a phenomenon known as bleaching. They're turning white as colorful colonies of algae and other life forms die out due to pollution and warming seawater. Fujita says we might not be able to curb global warming in the short run, but he says reducing pollution, overfishing, and other stresses could help coral reefs recover.
Coral reefs, when you remove the other stresses to them, may have an enhanced capacity to cope with the stress of climate change. I've been out in the South Pacific and in other parts of the world, and I've seen coral reefs come back from tremendous natural disasters like volcanic explosions and huge storms that break off the corals. As long as we're not polluting those or overfishing them, they do have a tremendous resilience and ability to recover.
Fujita says it's not too late to save coral reefs and other marine ecosystems. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Telling the truth that multinational corporations would really rather prefer you didn't know. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, back with you 4 minutes before the top of the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our number, our last call for the day. Greg in New Mexico. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Tom, I was thinking of a way to take some of Bush's bluster away over the capture of Osama bin Laden.
You mean when it happens? Yeah, okay. How?
Yeah, when it happens. And that's for people to set up office pools or something. When do you think, you know, name the day that he'll be captured?
You know, I'm
if everyone knows that it's going to happen, then big deal.
Yeah, that's a great one, Greg. You know, I'll bet that in Vegas there are already people taking bets on when Osama's going to be captured.
But if people did it in every office around the country, then when it happens, someone will win, and we all knew that it was going to happen.
You know, what would kickstart that is if one of these offshore betting websites that operates outside the purview of the anti-gambling laws in the United States were to start, you know, to run a, what do you call it, a pool?
Person closest to the capture wins the money, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, a way that you could actually do it and make money on it and do it legally. Oh, this is incredible. I think it would be legal, would be to do what John Poindexter was going to do. John Poindexter had this scheme in the Pentagon where they were going to put up a website and allow people to buy futures on terrorist attacks. Remember that? Remember when that happened?
Yeah.
And you could say, okay, I'm going to buy a future. I'm going to spend $500 on the assumption that there's going to be a terrorist attack on the 16th of October, all right, whatever. And if your date came up, then you get to you paid $500, but you get to buy that you make thousands of dollars. You know, as a bottom line, it's buying futures so you could set up a website and sell futures on when Osama gets captured, and it wouldn't be called betting. Poindexter's already told us how to do it. Hey, there's an idea for you, Greg. You want to make some money on the Internet?
Okay, well, I got to get online, Tom.
There you go. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thank you. Thank you so much, Louise, for producing a great program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for editing and selecting our music there in New York City. Thanks to our sponsors for participating. Especially our sponsor, and thanks to you for listening. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening and for patronizing our sponsors. It's really important. It keeps the program on the air. This is Tom Hartman. I'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me.
Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or a mistake.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.